on stalking through the corridor, like she had dramatic music accompanying her that only she could hear. Hermione was starting to worry about what exactly the impressionable youths of the Chaos Legion were learning from Harry Potter.
"But, I mean,"
Parvati said. She still had a contemplative look on her face.
"I mean, you can see why the headmaster would think we were just silly girls, right? What does protesting outside the headmaster's office have to do with becoming heroines?"
"Huh?"
Lavender said, now looking thoughtful herself.
"That's true. We should be doing something heroic. I mean, heroinic."
Said Hannah, which very much expressed Hermione's own feelings on the subject.
"Well," said Parvati, "has anyone already been through Dumbledore's third floor forbidden corridor? I mean, everyone in Gryffindor's been through it by now."
"Hold on,"
Hermione said desperately.
"I don't want you doing anything dangerous."
There was a pause while everyone looked at Hermione, who was realizing, much too late, why Dumbledore hadn't wanted anyone else to be a hero.
"I don't think you can become a heroine if you never do anything dangerous,"
Lavender observed reasonably.
"Besides," said Padma, a considering look on her face, "everyone knows that nothing really bad ever happens in Hogwarts, right? Do students, I mean, not to the defense professors. We've got all these ancient wards and so on."
Hannah said again.
"Yeah," said Parvati. "The worst that can happen is that we'll lose a few dozen house points or something, and there's two of us from each house, so that'll all come out even."
"Why, that's brilliant, Hermione,"
said Daphne in a tone of great amazement.
"The way you set it up means that we can get away with anything, and I didn't even notice your cunning plan until now."
Said Hermione, Hannah, and Susan.
"Right,"
said Parvati.
"So now it's time for us to become real heroines. We'll come for the darkness. And make it face us,"
said Lavender.
"And teach it to be afraid,"
Tracy Davis said grimly. Chapter 71 Self-Actualization, Part 6.
"Well,"
Daphne whispered, keeping her voice as low as she could,
"at least now I don't feel like the only sane person in Hogwarts anymore."
"Because now you've got the rest of us as friends,"
whispered Lavender Brown, who was tiptoeing along at her left side.
"I don't think that's what she means,"
General Granger murmured from Lavender's own left. They crept slowly and carefully through the corridors of Hogwarts, all eight of them keeping both ears peeled for the slightest sound of trouble. Just like it was a battle and they were looking for enemy soldiers to ambush. Only, in this case, they were looking for bullies to vanquish and victims to rescue in the span between the end of breakfast time and when Lavender and Parvati had to get to their herbology class. Lavender had argued that if one first-year girl could take down three older bullies, then eight first-year girls ought to be able to outfight 24 older bullies because of multiplication. Judging by her frantic spluttering and waving of hands, General Granger hadn't found this convincing. Padma had stayed silent for a bit during the ensuing argument, and then observed thoughtfully that even in Hogwarts, beating up first-year girls probably wouldn't be good for your reputation as a bully. Parvati had straightened up at this, exclaiming that this meant they were the only ones who could do something about Hogwarts' bully problem, which made it really, truly heroinic. Plus, the whole reason their parents had moved to Britain was so that the two of them could attend the world's only magical school with a 0% fatality rate, And what was the point if they didn't take advantage and try a few things? To which General Granger had responded that Parvati didn't understand the point of a perfect safety record at all. Lavender had said that if they were really all friends together and not Hermione's followers, like Professor Quirrell thought, then they should vote on things like this. Daphne had expected that hers would be the deciding vote after Hermione and Susan and Hannah voted no, and so Daphne had considered it carefully after her first flush of enthusiasm wore off. She was a Slytherin, after all, and that meant it was her responsibility to keep a watchful eye on their own interests while they were all running around trying to help people. Her job to figure out how risky it really was, and whether it would be worth it for them, just like Mother would have done in her place. Always looking out for yourself and your friends like that was what real Slytherining was all about. Hannah Abbott, the nervous little Hufflepuff girl, had, in a small trembling voice, said,
"Yes."
And now Daphne and Susan and Hermione had to stay with the other five. They couldn't possibly let the others go off on their own, because no Gryffindor would ever live down hurting the last surviving child of the Bones family, and no Slytherin would dare assault a daughter of the noble and most ancient House of Greengrass. Daphne hoped so, anyway. And General Granger, who'd started the whole thing, you didn't even have to ask. The corridors of Hogwarts passed them by one after another, their tense hands never straying far from their wands, as stone and wood and ever-burning torches came into vision and then moved past. At one point, they heard footsteps and drew in their breath, hands almost dropping to their wands, but it was just a lone older Ravenclaw who looked at them curiously before sniffing and dropping his head back to his book as he walked on. The heroines crept past solemn oaken panels carved with gilded frescoes, and came to a dead end leading into a boys' bathroom, and turned around and wandered back through the solemn oaken panels carved with gilded frescoes, and then turned through dusty old brick corridors grouted with worn cement, which sort of led them in a circle, actually, so they consulted a portrait and then went down a different dusty old brick corridor instead that took them to a brief rise of marble stairs that should have put them on the third and a half floor, if it had been anywhere but Hogwarts, and then it was back to tiled stone pavement again, and skylights that let shafts of sunlight pour down even though they were nowhere near the roof, and after they'd followed that passageway around a few corners, it took them to another boys' bathroom, clearly marked with a plaque showing the silhouette of a robed figure whizzing into a toilet. The eight of them stood before the closed door and stared with a certain amount of weariness.
"I'm bored," said Lavender.
Padma made a show of taking a pocket watch out of her robes and looking at it.
16 minutes and 30 seconds, she said. "And your record for the longest attention span in Gryffindor."
"I don't think this is going to work either," said Susan. "And I'm a Hufflepuff."
"You know," Lavender said thoughtfully, "I wonder if maybe what really makes someone a hero is that when they try something like this, something interesting actually happens."
"I bet you're right," said Tracy. "I bet if we had Harry Potter with us, we'd run into 3 bullies and a hidden room full of treasure in the first 5 minutes. I bet that all General Chaos has to do is go to the bathroom and he, like, find Slytherin's Chamber of Secrets or something."
Daphne couldn't quite let that one go past.
"You think Lord Slytherin would have put the entrance to the Chamber of Secrets in a bathroom?"
"What I'm saying,"
said Susan as Tracy was opening her mouth to reply,
is that we've got no way of actually finding any bullies. I mean, all they've got to do is find a Hufflepuff somewhere, but we've got to run across them at exactly the right time. Do you see? Which is a very good problem, because if we did find them, we'd all get squished like bugs. Can't we just do the forbidden third-floor corridor like we're supposed to?
Lavender snorted scornfully.
You don't become a real heroine just by doing the forbidden things the headmaster tells you not to do.
Daphne's mind tried to wrap around this statement as she slightly thanked the Sorting Hat for not putting her anywhere near Gryffindor.
Come to think,
Parvati said slowly.
I mean, what are the odds that Harry Potter would run across those five bullies on his first morning of school? He must have had some way of finding them.
Daphne appeared to be standing where looking at Parvati let her see Hermione, so she noticed the Ravenclaw girl's expression change. And then she realized that the Sunshine General had also found some bullies just recently.
"Oh!"
said Padma in a tone of sudden realization.
"Of course! He got dulled by the ghost of Salazar Slytherin!"
What?
Said Daphne at the same time as several other people.
That's who the ghost was that scared me, I'm pretty sure,
Padma explained.
I mean, I only figured it out afterward, but yeah, Salazar Slytherin's ghost doesn't like it when Slytherins bully people. He thinks it shames his name. And the ghost is still keyed into the Hogwarts wards, so he knows everything that happens, I bet.
Daphne's mouth was hanging open, and she saw that Hannah had put a hand to her forehead and was leaning against the stone walls, while Tracy's eyes were blazing like little brown stars. Salazar Slytherin's ghost had leagued himself with Harry Potter, and had sent Hermione Granger to stop Derek's crew. She would have paid 100 galleons to be there when Draco Malfoy got told about this. Although, considering how fast rumours spread through Hogwarts, now that Padma had spilled the beans, Millicent had probably told him 30 minutes ago. In fact, now that Daphne thought about it...
So, said Parvati... We've got to ask the boy who lived where to find Salazar Slytherin's ghost. Wow, I guess if I'm saying stuff like that out loud, I might actually be turning into a heroine. Yes, said Lavender. We've got to ask the boy who lived where to find Salazar Slytherin's ghost. We've got to ask the boy... Who lived? Where to find Salazar Slytherin's ghost?
Repeated Hannah in a nervous voice, like she was forcing herself to say it.
And if that doesn't work,
shouted Tracy,
we'll stone Harry Potter, tie him up, and bring him with us.
It said something, Hermione Granger thought, and it was something rather sad, as the eight of them strolled back through the maze of twisty little passages that was Hogwarts, their time before the next class having run out without finding any bullies, that she genuinely didn't know whether Harry Potter had been led around by the ghost of Salazar Slytherin, or a phoenix, or what. And whatever Harry had done, she hoped it didn't work for them. And... most of all, she hoped that the others didn't vote for Tracy's idea of stunning Harry Potter and carting his unconscious body around with them to attract adventures. That couldn't possibly work in real life, or, if it did, she was giving up. Hermione looked from witch to witch, Tracy chatting with Lavender and the others making occasional remarks, and her gaze caught on a girl who was subdued and quiet,
the one person whose thoughts right now she couldn't guess at all.
"Hannah?"
she said to the girl walking alongside her. Hermione tried to make her voice as gentle as she could.
"You don't have to answer, but is it okay if I ask why you voted yes on fighting bullies?"
Hermione had thought she'd made her voice soft, but everyone stopped walking, and Lavender and Tracy halted their conversation and looked at them. Hannah's cheeks were already reddening, and just as Hannah opened her mouth,
"It's 'cause she's got more courage than you think, obviously," said Lavender.
Hannah paused with her mouth open. She closed her mouth. She swallowed hard and visibly, while her cheeks reddened even further. Then Hannah took a deep breath and said in a small voice,
"There's a boy I like."
The Hufflepuff girl flinched as she said it, and her head darted around nervously to look at everyone looking at her, while the pause and silence stretched.
Okay,
Susan said eventually.
"I've got 5 boys I like," said Lavender.
"Padma and I knew we'd both like the same boys," said Bhavati. "So we made a list and flipped a knot to see who got to pick first."
"I know who I'm destined to marry," said Tracy. "I don't care what the world says, he's meant to be mine."
This made all the other girls look expectantly at Hermione, whose brain had gone ahead and flushed Tracy's last statement entirely so it could focus just on the first thing Hannah had said. Said Hermione. She carefully continued, keeping her voice gentle.
"Hannah, the reason why you joined the Society for Promotion of Heroic Equality for Witches was that there's a boy who might like you more if you become a hero."
The Hufflepuff girl nodded again, her cheeks reddening even further while she stared down at her own reflection in her black polished shoes.
"She likes Neville Longbottom, actually," Daphne said.
The Slytherin gave a woeful sigh.
"And unfortunately for her, he's going to marry someone else. It's very tragic."
This produced a high-pitched eeping sound from Hannah as she went on staring at her feet.
"Wait, what?"
said Lavender.
"Neville's going to marry someone else? How do you know about this? Who?"
Daphne just shook her head sadly with a downcast expression.
"Excuse me?"
said Hermione, and then when the others looked at her again, while she tried to organize her thoughts,
Hannah, trying to become a hero so that a boy will like you isn't very feminist."
"It's pronounced feminine, actually," said Padma.
"And why are you calling Hannah unfeminine?" said Susan. "There's nothing unfeminine about wanting to impress a boy."
"Besides," said Bhavati, sounding puzzled, "isn't the whole point that we're trying to be heroes, even though that isn't feminine?"
The ensuing discussion would not be remembered by Hermione Granger as one of her most successful forays into the realms of political education. She tried to explain, and then, after the resulting argument, tried to explain again, while the other 7 girls looked at her more and more skeptically. Afterward, Daphne declared, in the imperious tones of the future Lady Greengrass, that if this feminism business meant girls weren't allowed to pursue boys in whichever way they pleased, then feminism could stay in the Muggle lands where it belonged. Lavender suggested that maybe witchism could say that witches got to do anything they wanted, which sounded like more fun than feminism. And finally, Padma closed off further discussion by observing wearily that she didn't see much point in going on arguing since Spew
wasn't about anything to do with feminism in the first place. It was just about more girls becoming heroes. Hermione had given up at that point. As their charm session that day ended, and the first-year Ravenclaws began shuffling out of the class, Hermione was already wincing to herself. They'd made it to class just barely before the opening gong. They'd had to run right over to their desks and sit down, so there hadn't been time for the awful thing to happen yet. But that just meant that Hermione got to look forward to the coming disaster for the whole class. Sure enough, after Professor Flitwick squeaked his dismissal and everyone rose from their chairs, Harry began walking toward her. And for her own part, Hermione shoved her book into a moleskin pouch and very quickly walked over to the door and threw it open and headed into the corridors. And of course Harry followed her with a surprised look because they had a library session scheduled.
Hermione? Harry said as he closed the door behind him. What's wrong?
The door flew open behind Harry not a moment after he closed it, almost hitting Harry as he stepped out of the way, and Padma Patil stepped out of the classroom with a dreadful look of determination upon her face.
"Excuse me, Mr. Potter,"
came the awful words, the young girl's high voice resounding through the corridor like the gloomy bells of doom.
"Can I ask you for help with something?"
Harry's eyebrows drew up, and he said,
"You can ask, of course. Can you tell us how to talk to Salazar Slytherin's ghost? We want him to tell us where to find bullies, like he tells you."
There was a little bit of silence in the corridor outside the classroom. The door opened again, and Sue peered out with an inquiring look.
"Well, we've got to get to the library," Harry said quite casually, his face looking relaxed. "Would you mind following us?"
And began to walk off in the direction that led to the library on odd-numbered days of the month, and Sue made like she was going to follow, but Harry's face turned toward her for a moment. It wasn't until Harry had rounded a corner that he drew his wand, said in a low, precise voice,
"Quiet us,"
and then turned to Padma and said,
"An interesting guess, Miss Patil."
Padma looked rather smug then and said,
"I should have figured it out earlier, really. There was that hiss in the ghost's voice. I should have thought Parselmouth right away, even before he started talking about Godric Gryffindor."
Harry's face didn't change.
"May I ask, Miss Patil, whether you've shared this thought with..."
"She said it in front of everyone in Spew," Hermione said.
Harry's eyes had that look they had when he was very rapidly calculating something. And then he said,
Hermione, what's the chance that..."
"She said it in front of Lavender and Tracy."
Said Padma.
"Should I not have done that?"
"Wait here,"
growled Mr. Goyle and went around the corner, and there was the sound of him knocking on Draco Malfoy's private room. There was a bit of a queasy feeling in Tracy's stomach, and she reminded herself again that since Padma had spilled the beans, someone was bound to tell Draco Malfoy, and it might as well be her. And it wasn't as if she owed Harry Potter anything, and a Slytherin had to do what was necessary to achieve her ambitions. She had been collecting ambitions ever since Professor Quirrell told her off, and so far she decided that she wanted to own her own Nimbus 2000 broomstick, become super famous, marry Harry Potter, eat chocolate frogs for breakfast every day, and defeat at least 3 Dark Lords, just to show Professor Quirrell who was ordinary.
"Mr. Malfoy will see you,"
said the low, menacing voice of Mr. Goyle as he returned.
and you'd better hope he doesn't think you're wasting his time."
The boy loomed at her briefly and then stepped aside. Tracy added having her own servants to her list of ambitions, and entered. The Malfoy private bedroom looked just like Daphne's. She'd been privately hoping for diamond chandeliers or golden frescoes on the walls. She'd never have said it in front of Daphne, but the House of Malfoy was a step up from Greengrass. But it was just a small bedroom like Daphne's, and the only difference was that Malfoy's stuff was decorated in silver snakes instead of emerald plants. As she stepped through the doorway, Draco Malfoy, who was perfectly groomed even inside his own bedroom, rose up from his desk chair to greet her with a small friendly bow, wearing a charming smile, just like she was someone who mattered, which made Tracy so flustered that she forgot everything she'd rehearsed inside her head and just blurted out,
"I've got something to tell you."
"Yes, Gregory said so,"
Draco Malfoy said smoothly.
"Please, Miss Davis, sit down."
He gestured to his own desk chair, even as he sat down on his bed. She felt somewhat light-headed as she carefully sat herself down in Malfoy's own chair, her fingers unthinkingly fiddling with how her dress robes fell across her knees, trying to make them look as elegant and uncreased as Draco Malfoy's.
"So, Miss Davis," said Draco Malfoy, "what did you want to tell me?"
Tracy hesitated, and then, when Malfoy's face started to look a bit impatient, just stammered it all out. Everything Padma had said about Salazar Slytherin's ghost sending Harry Potter to stop bullies, and also what Daphne had told her about Hermione Granger being in on it. Draco Malfoy's expression didn't change at all as she spoke, not even in the slightest, and it dawned on Tracy with a sickening lurch in her stomach.
"You don't believe me,"
she said. There was a slight pause.
"Well," said Draco Malfoy with a smile that wasn't quite as charming as his last one, "I do believe that's what Padma said and what Daphne said. So, thank you anyway, Miss Davis."
The boy rose from where he'd been sitting on his bed, and Tracy, not even thinking, rose from the chair. As he escorted her to the door, just as he was about to turn the knob, it occurred to Tracy that...
"You didn't ask what I wanted for the information," she said.
Draco Malfoy gave her some kind of look. She didn't quite know what it was supposed to mean, and he didn't say anything.
"Well, anyway,"
Tracy said, making an on-the-spot change to her previous plans,
"I don't want anything for the information. I was just being friendly."
A brief look of surprise crossed Draco Malfoy's face for just an instant before his expression flattened again, and he said,
"It's not that easy to become friends with a Malfoy, Miss Davis."
Tracy smiled and meant it.
"Well, I'll just go on being friendly then,"
she said, and left the room with a skip in her step, feeling like a real Slytherin for maybe the first time in her life, and having just decided that Draco Malfoy would be one of her husbands too. After the girl was gone, Gregory came in, shut the door again, and said,
"Are you all right, Mr. Malfoy?"
Draco said nothing to his servant and friend. His eyes gazed off into nowhere, like he was trying to stare through the wall of his bedroom, through the Hogwarts lake that surrounded the Slytherin dungeons, through Earth's crust and atmosphere, and the interstellar dust of the Milky Way,
into the utterly empty and lightless void between galaxies which no wizard and no scientist had ever seen.
"Mr. Malfoy?"
Gregory said, starting to sound a little worried.
"I can't believe I believed every word of that," said Draco.
Daphne finished her final inch of transfiguration and looked up across the Slytherin common room at where Millicent Bulstrode was still working on her own homework. It was time to come to a decision. If Spew did go around trying to stun bullies, the bullies wouldn't like it. That was certain. And they'd try to do something unpleasant about it, which was also certain. On the other hand, if the bullies got really nasty, then Hermione could ask Harry Potter for help. Or they could pool their combined Quirrell points and ask the defense professor for a favor. No. The thing that Daphne was really worried about was if this business got them in bad with Professor Snape. You didn't want to ever end up on the wrong side of Professor Snape. But since the day she had challenged Neville to a most ancient duel, she'd noticed people looking at her differently. Even the Slytherins who made fun of her were looking at her differently. It was dawning on Daphne that being the daughter of the noble and most ancient House of Greengrass brought in a lot more respect if you were a beautiful heroine born to a most ancient house, and not just a pretty noble girl. It was the difference between having your role played by the lead actress and having your role played by a 2-gallon extra with a screechy laugh. Fighting bullies might not be the best way to become a heroine, but Father had once told her that the trouble with passing up opportunities was that it was habit-forming. If you told yourself you were waiting for a better opportunity next time, why? Next time you'd probably tell yourself the same thing. Father had said that most people spent their whole lives waiting for an opportunity that was good enough, and then they died. Father had said that while seizing opportunities would mean that all sorts of things went wrong, it wasn't nearly as bad as being a hopeless lump. Father had said that after she got into the habit of seizing opportunities, then it was time to start being picky about them. On the other hand, Mother had warned her not to take all of Father's advice, and said that Daphne wasn't allowed to ask about Father's 6th year in Hogwarts until she was at least 30 years old. But, in the end, Father had gotten Mother to marry him and successfully plotted his way into a most ancient house. So there was that. Millicent Bulstrode finished her homework and began putting her things away. Daphne stood up from her desk and walked over. Millicent swung out her legs from the table and stood up, slinging her book bag over one shoulder and looked over to where Daphne was approaching, the girl's expression puzzled.
"Hey, Millicent,"
Daphne said as she drew near, making her voice low and excited.
"Guess what I figured out today?"
"The thing about Salazar Slytherin's ghost helping Granger," said Millicent. "I already heard about that."
"No,"
Daphne said in a hushed whisper.
"This is even better."
"Really?"
Millicent said in an equally low, excited voice.
"What is it?"
Daphne looked around conspiratorially.
"Come to my room and I'll tell you."
They went off toward the stairs that led downward. The private rooms were even lower in the lake than the 7th-year dorms. Soon enough, Daphne was sitting in her comfy desk chair and Millicent had bounced over to the edge of her bed.
"Quietus,"
said Daphne. Then they were both seated,
And then, instead of putting her wand away inside her robes, Daphne just let her hand fall naturally down to her side, still holding the wand, just in case.
"All right," said Millicent. "What is it?"
"You know what I figured out?" said Daphne. "I figured out that you get the gossip so fast you know about things before they actually happen."
Daphne had half expected Millicent to turn white and fall over, and she didn't really. But the girl did flinch pretty hard before she started stammering denials.
"Don't worry," said Daphne with her sweetest smile. "I won't tell anyone else you're a seer. I mean, we're friends, right?"
Rhianne Felthorn, 7th year of Slytherin, was working diligently on yet another 2-foot essay. She was taking everything except divination and muggle studies, and her NEWT year seemed to consist entirely of homework. When her head of house strode up to the table she was working at and barked,
"You will come with me, Miss Felthorn,"
and walked away even as she frantically began putting away her parchment and book and quill. When she caught up with Professor Snape, he was waiting just outside the room and gazing at her with half-lidded eyes that seemed far too intense. And before she could ask what this was about, he spun without a word and stalked off through the hallways, so that she had to scramble to keep up. Their walk took them down a flight of stairs, and then another, below what she'd thought was the lowest level of the Slytherin dungeons. And the corridors began to look older in their appearance, the architecture reverting back in time by centuries into roughened stone held together by crude-looking mortar. She began to wonder if Professor Snape was taking her to the real dungeons that she'd heard rumours of, the true dungeons of Hogwarts that had been sealed off to all but faculty, and if maybe Professor Snape did terrible things down there to innocent, helpless young girls. But that was probably just wishful thinking on her part. They went down another flight of stairs and came out into a room that was no room at all, but an empty rock cavern with a single door, pierced by many dark openings, and lit by a single torch of ancient style that fired as they entered. Professor Snape took out his wand then and began to cast charm after charm. She lost track of how many. And when the potions master was done, he turned back toward her, locked his intense eyes on hers, and said in a level voice, unlike his usual drawl,
"You will say nothing to anyone of this matter, Miss Felthorn. Nothing now or ever. If that is acceptable to you, nod. If not, we will turn and go."
She nodded, frightened, and with a strange hope dawning in her heart. Well, not exactly her heart.
"The task I have for you is very simple, Miss Felthorn," said Professor Snape's toneless voice. "And your extremely generous pay of 50 galleons is merely to compensate you for being memory-charmed afterward."
She drew an involuntary breath. Her family might be rich, but they had other daughters and kept her on a tight leash, and it was certainly a lot of money for her. Then her ears caught up with the words, "memory-charmed," and for a moment she felt outraged. There was no point if she couldn't keep the memories. What sort of girl did Professor Snape think she was?
"You surely know," said Severus Snape, "of Miss Hermione Granger, the Sunshine General."
"What?"
said Rhianne Felthorn in sudden horror and disgust.
"She's in her first year! Ew!"
Chapter 72. Self-Actualization. Plausible Deniability. Part 7. The winter sun had well set by the time dinner ended, and so it was amid the peaceful lights of stars twinkling down from the enchanted ceiling of the great hall that Hermione left for the Ravenclaw Tower alongside her study partner, Harry Potter, who lately seemed to have a ridiculous amount of time for studying. She hadn't the faintest idea of when Harry was doing his actual homework, except that it was getting done. Maybe by house elves while he slept. Nearly every single pair of eyes in the whole hall lay on them as they passed through the mighty doors of the dining room, which were more like siege gates of a castle than anything students ought to go through on the way back from supper. They went out without speaking, and walked until the distant babble of student conversation had faded into the distance, and then the two of them went on a little further through the stone corridors before Hermione finally spoke.
"Why do you do that, Harry?"
"Do what?"
said the boy who lived in an abstracted tone, as if his mind were quite elsewhere, thinking about vastly more important things.
"I mean, why didn't you just tell them no?"
"Well," Harry said as their shoes pattered across the tiles, "I can't just go around saying no every time someone asks me about something I haven't done. I mean, suppose someone asks me, 'Harry, did you pull the prank with the invisible paint?' And I say, 'No,' and then they say, 'Harry, do you know who messed with the Gryffindor Seeker's broomstick?' And I say, 'I refuse to answer that question.' It's sort of a giveaway."
"And that's why,"
Hermione said,
"you told everyone..."
She concentrated, remembering the exact words.
"That if, hypothetically, there was a conspiracy, you could not confirm or deny that the true master of the conspiracy was Salazar Slytherin's ghost, and, in fact, you wouldn't even be able to admit the conspiracy existed, so people ought to stop asking you questions about it."
Yeah, said Harry Potter, smiling slightly. "That'll teach them to take hypothetical scenarios too seriously."
"And you told me not to answer anything?"
They might not believe you if you deny it," said Harry. "So it's better to say nothing, unless you want them to think you're a liar."
"But,"
Hermione said helplessly,
But now people think I'm doing things for Salazar Slytherin."
The way the Gryffindors had been looking at her, the way the Slytherins had been looking at her.
"It goes along with being a hero," Harry said. "Have you seen what the Quibbler says about me?"
For a brief second, Hermione imagined her parents reading a newspaper article about her, and instead of the story being about her winning a nationwide spelling bee, or any of the other ways she'd imagined getting into the papers, the headline said,
"Hermione Granger gets Draco Malfoy pregnant."
It was enough to make you think twice about the whole heroine business. Harry's voice turned a bit more formal.
"Speaking of which, Miss Granger, how goes your latest quest?"
"Well,"
said Hermione,
"unless the ghost of Salazar Slytherin really does show up and tell us where to find bullies, I don't think we're going to have much luck."
Not that she was sorry about that. She glanced over at Harry and saw the boy giving her a peculiarly intense look.
"You know, Hermione,"
the boy said quietly, as though to make sure that nobody else in the world heard,
"I think you're right. I think some people get a lot more help than others in becoming heroes, and I don't think that's fair either."
and Harry grabbed at her witch's robes where they lay over her arm, and hustled her into a side hall of the corridor they were walking through, her mouth gaping open in surprise even as Harry's wand came into his hand. They rounded a curve of the side hall, and it was so narrow that it was almost pushing her and Harry into each other, even as Harry pointed to the way they'd come and softly said,
"Quietus."
Then, a moment later, in the other direction,
"Quietus."
Again. The boy looked searchingly around them, not just to every side, but even upward, toward the ceiling, and down, toward the floor. And then Harry stuck a hand in his pouch and said,
"Invisibility cloak."
"Eh?"
said Hermione. Harry was already drawing out folds of shimmering black fabric from the moke-skin device.
"Don't worry,"
the boy said with a small grin.
"They're so rare that nobody bothered to make a school rule against them."
And then Harry held out the dark velvet mesh to her and said, his voice strangely formal,
"I do not give you, but loan you my cloak unto Hermione Jean Granger. Protect her well."
She stared at the shimmering velvet of the cloak, cloth that swallowed all the light that fell on it, except what glinted from small, strange reflections. Fabric so perfectly black it should have shown dust or lint or something. But it didn't. The longer you looked, the more you felt like what you were seeing wasn't really there at all. But then you blinked again and it was just a black cloak.
"Take it, Hermione."
Hardly even thinking, Hermione stretched out her hand to grasp the fabric. And then, just as her brain woke up and she started to pull her hand back, Harry let go of the cloak and it started to fall and she grabbed at it without thinking. And the instant her fingers touched and held the cloak, she felt an intangible jolt run through her like picking up her wand for the first time. And it was like she heard a song being sung, ever so faintly in the back of her mind.
"That's one of my quest items, Hermione,"
Harry said softly.
"It belonged to my father, and it's not something I can replace, if it's lost. Don't loan it to anyone else. Don't show it to anyone. Don't tell anyone it exists. But if you want to borrow it for a while, just come to me and ask."
Hermione finally tore her eyes loose from the depthless black folds and stared back up at Harry.
"I can't."
You certainly can," Harry said. "Because there's nothing even the tiniest bit fair about my finding this gift wrapped in a box next to my bed one morning, and you... not."
Harry paused thoughtfully.
"Unless you did get your own invisibility cloak, in which case, never mind."
Then the implications of invisibility cloak finally dawned on her, and she pointed a shocked finger at Harry, though they were close enough together that she couldn't quite straighten her arm properly, and her voice rose with considerable indignation as she said,
"So that's how you disappeared from the potions closet! And the time when..."
And then she trailed off, because even with an invisibility cloak, she still couldn't see how Harry had... Harry buffed his fingernails on his robes with artful nonchalance, and said,
"Well, you knew there had to be some trick to it, right? And now the heroine will mysteriously know where and when to find bullies, just like she listened to the bullies planning it, even though nobody her age could possibly have turned herself invisible to spy on them."
There was a pause and a silence.
"Harry,"
she said,
"I'm not sure any more that fighting bullies is such a good idea."
Harry's eyes stayed steady on hers.
"Because the other girls might get hurt?"
She nodded. just nodded.
"That's their choice, Hermione, just like it's yours. I decided not to do the obvious, stupid thing that everyone does in books. Try to keep you safe and protected and helpless, and have you get really angry at me and push me away while you go off on your own and get into even more trouble, and then heroically pull through it successfully, after which I'd finally have my epiphany and realize that blah, 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 etc. I know how that part of my life story goes, so I'm just skipping over it. If I can predict what I'm going to think later, I might as well go ahead and think it now. Anyway, my point is, you shouldn't smother your friends to keep them safe either. Just tell them up front it's predictably going to go horribly wrong, and if they still want to be heroines after that, fine.
It was at times like this that Hermione wondered if she was ever going to get used to the way Harry thought.
Harry, I really...
Her voice stuck for a second.
Really? Really don't want them getting hurt? Especially because of something I started.
Hermione, Harry said seriously, I'm pretty sure you did the right thing. I don't see what could realistically happen to them that would be worse for them, in the long run, than not trying.
What if they get badly hurt?
Hermione said. Her voice felt blocked in her throat. She remembered Captain Ernie saying how Harry had just stared straight into the eyes of a bully as the bully bent his finger back, before Professor Sprout had arrived to save him. And there was another thought that came after that about Hannah and her delicate hands with the fingernails that she carefully painted in Hufflepuff yellow every morning. But that wasn't allowed to be imagined.
And then there... never do anything courageous ever again.
I don't think it works like that, Harry said steadily. Even if it all goes mind-bogglingly wrong, I don't think it works like that inside a human mind. The important thing is believing about yourself that you're someone who can break your boundaries. Trying and getting hurt can't possibly be worse for you than being... stuck.
What if you're wrong, Harry?
Harry paused for a moment, and then shrugged a little sadly and said,
What if I'm right?
Hermione looked back at the black mesh running over her hand. From the inside, the cloak felt strangely soft and yet firm against her palm, as if it was trying to give her hand a reassuring hug. Then she lifted her arm back up, holding the cloak back to Harry. Harry didn't move to take it.
I...
said Hermione.
I mean, thank you. Thank you a lot. But I'm still thinking about it, so... you can take it back for now... And, Harry, I don't think it's right to spy on people.
Not even on known bullies to rescue their victims, Harry said. I've never been bullied, but I've been through a realistic simulation, and it didn't feel very pleasant. Have you ever been bullied, Hermione?
No.
She said in a quiet voice, and went on holding out Harry's invisibility cloak to him. Finally, Harry took back his cloak. She felt a small twitch of loss as the inaudible song vanished from the back of her mind, and started to stuff the black material back into his pouch. As the pouch ate the last of the fabric, Harry turned from her to break the quieting barrier.
And,
Hermione said...
That's not the Cloak of Invisibility, is it? The one we read about in the library on page 18 of Paula Vera's translation of Gottschalk's An Illustrated Scroll of Lost Devices?
Harry turned his head back, grinning slightly, and said in exactly the same tone of voice he'd used earlier with the other students at dinner,
I cannot confirm or deny that I possess magical artifacts of incredible power.
When Hermione climbed into bed that night, she was still trying to decide. Her life had been simpler at dinner time, back when there hadn't been any practical way for them to find bullies, and now she had to choose again. Not for herself this time, but for her friends. In her mind's eye, she kept seeing Dumbledore's lined face and the pain it hadn't quite hidden, and in her mind's eye, she kept hearing Harry's voice saying, "That's their choice, Hermione, just like it's yours." And her hand kept remembering the sensation of the cloak against her fingers, replaying it over and over in her mind. There was a power to the feeling that compelled her thoughts to return to it, and to the song she had heard, hadn't heard, in a part of her mind and magic which now lay silent once more. Harry had spoken to the cloak like it was a person, telling it to take good care of her. Harry had said the cloak had belonged to his father, that he couldn't replace it if it was lost. But Harry wouldn't really do that, would he? Just hand her one of the three Deathly Hallows created centuries before Hogwarts? She could say that she felt flattered, but this went way beyond feeling flattered, into making her wonder just what she was to Harry, exactly. Maybe Harry was the sort of person who went around loaning ancient, lost magical artifacts to anyone he considered a friend, but when she thought about which part of his life Harry had said he'd skipped over, the part where he'd tried to keep her safe and protected, Hermione stared up at the ceiling of the Ravenclaw dorm. Somewhere beyond her bed, Mandy and Sue were talking. She'd turned up her quieting charm to where she couldn't hear the exact words, but could still hear the faint murmur. There was something comforting about sleeping in a dorm with the other girls. Harry kept his own quieter turned up all the way, she knew. She was starting to wonder if, maybe, Harry actually did, well, you know, like her. It took Hermione Granger a long time to fall asleep that night. And when she woke up the next morning, there was a small slip of parchment peeking out from under her pillow which said, "At 10:30, you will find a bully in the fourth passageway to the left of the hall leaving the potions classroom. S." When Hermione entered the great hall that morning, her stomach was filled with flying butterflies the size of hippogriffs. Even as she approached the Ravenclaw breakfast table, she still hadn't decided what to do. There was an empty place next to Padma, she saw. That would be where to sit down, if she was going to tell Padma, and then ask Padma to tell Daphne and Tracy. Hermione walked toward the empty place next to Padma. There were words waiting in her throat. "Padma, I got a mysterious message," and she could feel a huge brick wall inside her, stopping the words from coming out. She'd be putting Hannah and Susan and Daphne in danger, taking them and leading them by the hand straight into trouble. That was wrong. Or she could just go try to handle the bully herself, without telling her friends anything. And that, quite obviously, was also wrong. Hermione knew she was being faced with a moral dilemma, just like all those wizards and witches she'd read about in stories. Only in stories, people always got a right choice and a wrong choice. Not two wrong ones, which seemed a bit unfair. But she had the sense, somehow. Maybe it came from the way Harry always talked about how the history books would see them, that she was faced with a heroic decision, and that her whole life might end up going one way or another, depending on what she chose right now, this morning. Hermione sat down at the table without looking to either side, just gazing at the plate and silverware like they might have answers hidden inside, thinking as hard as she ever had, and a few seconds later, she heard Padma's voice whispering almost in her ear,
"Daphne says she knows where a bully's going to be at 10:30 today."
Doomed. They were all doomed, in Susan Bones' opinion. Auntie sometimes told stories which started out like this, people doing something they knew was stupid, and the stories usually ended with someone being doomed all over the floor and all over the walls and getting on Auntie's shoes.
"Hey, Padma,"
muttered Parvati, her voice just barely audible over the soft impacts of eight girls tiptoeing through the corridor leading to the potions classroom.
"Do you know why Hermione's been sighing all morning?"
"No talking,"
hissed Lavender, the harsh whisper sounding much louder than Parvati's mutter.
"You never know when evil might be listening."
"Shh," said three other girls even more loudly. Utterly, totally, quite extremely doomed. As they approached the fourth passageway to the left of the potions classroom, where Daphne's mysterious informant had said the bullying would take place, the eight of them moved slower. The sound of their feet got softer. And finally, General Granger made the gesture that meant, "Halt, I'll look ahead." Lavender raised her hand then, and when Hermione turned to look at her, Lavender, looking puzzled, pointed straight down the corridor, gestured to herself, and then tried to sign something else that Susan didn't understand. General Granger shook her head and once again, this time, with slower, more exaggerated movements, made the sign for "Halt, I'll look ahead." Lavender, looking even more puzzled, pointed back the way they'd come and made a bouncing gesture with her other hand. Now, everyone else was looking even more confused than Lavender, and Susan thought with some acerbity that, evidently, 1 hour of practice done 2 days ago wasn't enough to remember a new set of code signals. Hermione pointed at Lavender, then at the floor beneath Lavender's feet, the expression on her face making it very clear that the intended meaning was, "You stay here." Lavender nodded. "Doom, doom, doom," went the words of the Chaos Legion's marching song through Susan's mind. "Doom, doo-doom, doom, doo-doom." Hermione reached into her robes and drew out a little rod with a mirror on the end of it and an eyepiece. Very, very softly indeed, the Ravenclaw girl crept up to the wall, right next to where the passageway opened off the corridor, and peeked just the tip of the eyepiece around the corner. Then a little more, then a little more. Then General Granger cautiously stuck her head around the side. General Granger turned back to them, nodded, and made the hand gesture for "Follow me." Susan felt a little better as she crept forward. The part of the plan which called for them to arrive 30 minutes before the bully had, apparently, actually worked. Maybe they were only slightly doomed. At 10:29, almost on the dot, the bully showed up. If anyone had been present to hear, though the corridor was apparently empty, they would have heard his shoes clicking solidly through the main corridor, entering the passageway, walking toward where the passageway turned its first corner, turning that corner, and then stopping in some surprise upon seeing that the passageway now terminated in a solid brick wall where no wall had been before. Then the bully shrugged and turned away, as he leaned back to watch the main passage from just around the corner. It was the Castle Hogwarts, after all. Behind the hastily transfigured thin panels they'd assembled into the outward appearance of a brick wall, the girls waited. Not speaking, not moving, hardly even breathing, but watching through the eye-holes they'd left themselves. As Susan's gaze took in the bully, she could feel the tightening of her chest all the way into her toes. The boy looked to be in his 7th year, if not older, and his robes were trimmed in green instead of the red they'd been hoping for, and he had muscles. And after staring for a bit longer, Susan realized his stance had the balance that meant that he dueled. Then they all heard the sound of more feet approaching from the corridor. The 4th-year Gryffindors and Slytherins had just been let out of potions class. The footsteps pattered past, and diminished, and faded, and the bully didn't do anything. For a moment, Susan felt an instant of relief. Then another, smaller group of footsteps approached. The bully didn't do anything as the footsteps went past. That happened a few more times. And then, as there approached the faintly audible sound of one last set of footsteps, the 7 girls heard the bully's voice saying, clear and cold and quiet, "Protego!" Someone did gasp then, though fortunately very, very quietly. If they couldn't get in even a single shot... The bullies were learning already, Susan realized. She hadn't expected Spew to be able to do this very often before the bullies caught on, but Hermione had already defeated 3 bullies, and the school had been buzzing with speculation about Salazar Slytherin's ghost yesterday.
"He's expecting us."
Susan would have whispered to give up, to abort the plan, only there was no way to convey a message to...
"Silencio," said the bully in a soft, deliberate voice with his wand pointed toward the corridor, the blue haze of his shielding charm shimmering around him.
"Accio, victim."
When the 4th-year boy came into their field of vision, he was dangling upside down as if an invisible hand were holding him high by one leg, his red-trimmed robes beginning to slide down his thighs to reveal the pants beneath. His mouth was opening and closing helplessly, no sound coming out.
"I suppose you're wondering what's going on," the 7th-year Slytherin said in a quiet, cold voice. "Don't worry. It's so simple even a Gryffindor could understand."
With that, the Slytherin's left hand formed a fist and drove hard into the Gryffindor's belly. The 4th-year boy's body jerked around frantically, but still no words left his mouth.
"You're my victim," said the older Slytherin. "I'm a bully. I'm going to beat you up, and we'll see if anyone stops me."
It was at that moment that Susan realized it was a trap. And in almost the same moment, there rang out the mighty and high-pitched voice of a young girl crying,
"Stop, evildoer! Finite incantatum!"
Lavender, thought Susan, agonized. The Gryffindor girl had volunteered to be a distraction, while the rest of them executed a flank attack from where the bully wouldn't expect it. That had been the plan. Only now...
"In the name of Hogwarts!"
cried Lavender's voice, though they couldn't see her.
"And in the name of heroines everywhere, I command you to let go of that..." "Yeah!"
"Expelliarmus," said the bully. "Stupefy! Accio, stupid heroine!"
When Lavender floated into their vision, dangling by one foot and unconscious, Susan blinked. The girl was dressed in a bright crimson and gold skirt and blouse instead of her usual Hogwarts robes. The bully was also giving the girl's upside-down body an odd look, and then he pointed his wand at her and said,
"Finite incantatum."
But the clothes stayed the same. Then the bully shrugged and, still facing in the direction of Lavender instead of the dangling 4th-year boy,
drew back his fist.
Flicken!
Yelled five voices, and five green spirals blasted from five wands aimed through five holes in the false wall. And an instant later, Hermione's voice shouted,
Stupefy!
Five green spirals shattered ineffectually on blue haze, and Hermione's red bolt bounced off the haze and struck the fourth-year boy, who jerked and then was still. And the seventh-year bully turned around, smiling grimly, as the first-year girls screamed and charged. Susan's eyes flew open, and instantly she was rolling away from where she'd lain on the floor, her lungs still on fire, and her whole body still aching from where she'd been hit. The battle had only moved forward a few seconds from what she could see, Hannah's body falling with her arm still stretched out towards Susan.
Glissio!
Shouted Hermione, but the older boy just slashed his wand down, leaving a trail of green glow behind, and Hermione's charm visibly disrupted into a shower of blue-white sparks. Then, in almost the same motion, the bully said, Stupefy! And Hermione was blown backward, and Susan summoned up all the magic she had left and shouted,
Innovate!
At Hermione's body, even as the bully turned toward her, the bully's wand pointed in her direction again, and then Padma yelled,
Prismatis!
Just before the bully shouted,
Impedimenta!
The rainbow sphere forming around the bully, and the seventh-year Slytherin staggered as his own hex was reflected back at him. But an instant later, the bully's wand swept back to tap himself, and then Padma's prismatic sphere shattered like a blown soap bubble as the bully's wand cut through it and...
Innovate!
Yelled Bhavati at Hannah's body, and Tracy and Lavender screamed at the same time,
Wingardium Leviosa!
Hannah Abbott held out her wand with a hand that trembled with exhaustion. She didn't have enough magic left for even one Innovate now. The rest of the passageway was silent, scattered bodies lying across the ground, Padma and Tracy and Lavender, Hermione and Bhavati in a heap against one wall, Susan standing in petrified rigour as her eyes tracked it all helplessly. Even the Gryffindor boy lying sprawled and motionless. Hermione had woken him and he'd fought, but it hadn't been enough. It had been a very short battle. The bully was still smiling, the only signs of his exertion a wavering ripple in the blue glow surrounding him, and a few beads of sweat on his forehead. The bully raised his arm, wiped the sweat off his forehead, and stalked toward her like a man-shaped living Lethavold. Hannah turned and fled, spun and ran, with screams kept bound in her choking throat, sprinted past the fallen panelling of the fake brick wall, ran down the passageway with all the speed she could muster, weaving as much as she could. Just before Hannah got to the turn in the passageway, the bully's voice from behind her said,
Kloof!
And she got awful cramps all through her legs. She fell down and slid and hit her head against the wall, only she didn't even notice the pain of the smack as she started to scream with the twisting muscles. The bully was still stalking toward her, Hannah saw as she turned her head, approaching her slowly, still wearing that dreadful smile. And she rolled. Despite the pain in her leg muscles, knotted up around themselves, she rolled around the corner of the passageway and screamed,
Go away!
I think not, said the bully, his voice deep and scary like that of a grown man, sounding very close at hand now. The bully walked around the corner, and Daphne Greengrass stabbed her most ancient blade directly into his groin. There was a flash that lit up the whole corridor. It was with a subdued mien that seven girls left Madame Pomfrey's office, leaving one of their own behind in a hospital bed. Hannah would be all right in about 35 minutes, the healer had said. Torn muscles were easy to mend.
Daphne had done all the talking, and according to her, Hannah had suffered a mishap with a road-running charm which had caused the leg cramps. Madame Pomfrey had given them a sharp look, but hadn't argued, even though that charm was around 6 years above their level. Madame Pomfrey had also given Daphne a potion to help with her state of total magical exhaustion, and warned her not to cast any spells for the next 3 hours. That, supposedly, was from Daphne using up too much magic trying to finite Hannah, rather than the most ancient blade drawing out all her power to break the Protego. The rest of them had decided not to say anything about the bruises under their robes until they could get some older girls to cast a pisky. There were limits to what Daphne could talk around. The whole thing, Susan thought, had been too close. Much too close. If the bully had so much as looked around the corner, if he'd taken a moment to recast his shielding charm.
"We should stop," said Susan,
as soon as the seven of them had gotten out of hearing range of the healer's office.
"We should stop doing this."
For some reason, then, even though they were supposed to vote on this sort of thing, everyone turned to look at General Granger. The Sunshine General didn't see them looking at her. She just strode on, gazing off straight ahead. After a little while, Hermione Granger said, in a voice that sounded thoughtful and a little sad,
"Hannah said she didn't want us to stop. I'm not sure it's right for us to be less brave for her than she is."
All the other girls except Susan nodded at that.
"I think that's got to be as bad as it gets," said Bavati. "And we can handle it. We've proved that now."
Susan couldn't think of anything to say to that. She didn't think that shrieking at the top of her lungs about blatant stupidity and doom would be persuasive. And she couldn't just leave the other girls either. Wasn't it enough to be cursed with hard work? Why did Hufflepuffs have to be loyal on top of everything else?
"By the way, Lavender," said Padma, "what in the name of Merlin's underpants were you wearing back there?"
"My hero outfit,"
said the Gryffindor girl. Daphne sounded weary as she spoke without turning her own head from where she was plodding through the hall. "It's the costume of the soldier of Gryffindor from the play Chronicles of the Lunarian Soldiers."
"Did you transfigure it?"
said Bavati, looking puzzled.
"But the bully cast finite on you."
"Nope," Lavender said. "It's real. See, I just transfigured my hero outfit into a regular shirt and skirt beforehand, so all I had to do was cast finite on myself after I saw the bully. Do you want your own, Bavati? I got mine made yesterday by Katrina and Joshua in 6th year for 12 sickles.
"I think,"
General Granger said in a careful voice,
"that would make us all look a little silly."
"Well," said Lavender, "we should vote on whether to..."
"I think,"
General Granger said,
"that no matter what anyone votes, I'm not going to be caught dead wearing one of those costumes."
Susan ignored the argument. She was trying to think up some sort of clever strategy for being less doomed. The whole great hall went silent, even if only for a moment, as the seven of them walked into lunch. Then the applause started. It was scattered, not the massive applause of everyone applauding at once. A lot of it came from the Gryffindor table, less from Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw, and none from Slytherin. Daphne felt her face tightening. She had hoped, well, maybe after they found a Gryffindor bully to stop and a Slytherin to rescue, her fellow Slytherins would realize. She looked at the Hufflepuff table. Neville Longbottom was applauding with his hands held high above his head, although he wasn't smiling. Maybe he'd heard about Hannah, or maybe he was wondering why Hannah wasn't there. Then, not quite able to help herself, she glanced toward the head table. Professor Sprout's face was lined with concern. She and Professor McGonagall were leaning their heads toward Headmaster Dumbledore, who had a solemn look, and all their lips were moving quickly. Professor Flitwick looked more resigned than anything else, and Quirrell, face slack, was taking trembling stabs at his soup using a spoon gripped in a fist. Professor Snape was looking directly at her? Or at Hermione Granger, standing next to her? A small, thin smile crossed the potion master's face, and he raised his hands, brought them together once in a motion that was too slow to be a real clap, and then the potions master turned back to his plate, ignoring the conversations around him. Daphne felt a little chill go down her spine, and she hastily turned to walk toward the Slytherin table. Susan and Lavender and Parvati peeled off from their group, heading toward the Hufflepuff and Gryffindor tables on the other side of the Great Hall. It happened as they were passing the part of the Slytherin table where the Slytherin Quidditch team sat. That was when Hermione stumbled suddenly, stumbled hard, like she was being yanked off her feet, and went sprawling into the gap between where Marcus Flint and Lucian Boole sat, and there was a sad little splutching sound as Hermione's face ended up in Flint's plate of steak and mashed potatoes. Everything seemed to happen too quickly then, or maybe it was just Daphne herself who was thinking too slow, as Flint let out a bellow of indignation and his hand yanked Hermione back and threw her into the Ravenclaw table, and she bounced off a student's back and collapsed onto the ground. The quiet spread out in ripples. Hermione pushed herself up on her hands, though she didn't get all the way to her feet. Daphne could see that her whole body was shaking and that her face was still covered with mashed potatoes with scattered pieces of steak. For a long moment, nobody spoke. Nobody moved. Like, nobody in the whole Great Hall could imagine, any more than Daphne could, what happened next. Then, Flint's powerful voice, the voice of the Slytherin captain that bellowed commands on the Quidditch pitch, said in a dangerous rumble, "You ruined my food, girl!" Another moment of frozen silence. Hermione's head, Daphne could see it trembling, turned to look at the Slytherin Quidditch captain. "Apologize to me," said Flint. Harry Potter started to push himself up from the Ravenclaw table, and then stopped abruptly, halfway to his feet, as if he'd just thought of something. Then five other people stood up from the Ravenclaw table. All of the Slytherin Quidditch team stood up, their wands coming into their hands, and then students stood up at the Gryffindor table and at the Hufflepuff table, and without thinking, Daphne turned to look at the head table, and she saw that the headmaster was still sitting down, watching. Just watching. Dumbledore was just watching, and he had one hand out as though to restrain Professor McGonagall. In just one second, someone would shout a spell, and then it would be too late. Why wasn't the headmaster doing anything? And a voice said, "My apologies." Daphne turned back to look, her mouth gasping open in absolute shock. "Scorgify," said that smooth voice, and the mashed potatoes vanished from Hermione's face, revealing the Ravenclaw's surprised expression as Draco Malfoy approached her, sheathed his wand again, and then knelt to one knee beside her and offered her a hand. "Sorry about that, Miss Granger," said Draco Malfoy's polite voice. "I guess someone thought they were being
funny.
Hermione took Draco's hand, and Daphne suddenly realized what was about to happen. But Draco didn't raise Hermione halfway up and then drop her. He just pulled her to her feet.
"Thanks," said Hermione.
"You're welcome,"
Draco Malfoy said in a loud voice, not looking to either side to see where all four houses of Hogwarts were staring at him in total shock.
"Just remember, being cunning and ambitious doesn't mean you have to be like that."
And then Draco Malfoy went back to his seat at the Slytherin bench and sat down like he'd just... Hermione went to the nearest empty place at the Ravenclaw bench and sat down. A number of other people rather slowly sat down.
"Daphne," said Tracy, "are you all right?"
Draco's heart was hammering in his chest so hard he worried it might explode right out of his chest in a shower of blood, like that curse Amicus Carrow had used once on a puppy. Draco's face stayed completely controlled, because he knew, it had been drilled into him over and over, that if he showed the slightest sign of the fear he was feeling, his housemates would rip him apart like a swarm of acromantulas. There'd been no time to check with Harry Potter. No time to plot. No time to think. Just the instant of realizing that the time to start rescuing Slytherin's reputation was right then. From all sides of the long Slytherin table, angry faces stared at Draco. But they were outnumbered by the faces that just looked puzzled.
"All right, I give up,"
said a sixth-year boy that Draco didn't recognize, sitting across from him and two places to his right.
"Why did you do that, Malfoy?"
Although his mouth was very dry, Draco didn't swallow. That would have been a sign of fear. Instead, he took a bite of carrots, which had the most moisture of anything on his plate, and chewed and swallowed, thinking as rapidly as he could.
"You know,"
Draco said, making his voice as cutting as he could, as his heart thumped even harder in his chest, as everyone around him stopped talking to listen,
"there's probably some way to make Slytherin look even worse than attacking 8 first-year girls from all 4 houses who are working together to stop bullies. But I can't think of how. This way, we get the benefit of what Greengrass is doing."
The puzzled faces stayed puzzled.
"What?"
said the sixth-year boy, and...
"Wait, what benefit?"
said a fifth-year girl sitting to his right.
"It makes Slytherin House look better,"
said Draco. The Slytherins around him were giving him quizzical gazes, like he'd just tried to explain algebra.
"Look better than who?"
said the sixth-year boy.
"But you just out of mudblood,"
said the fifth-year girl.
"How's that supposed to look good?"
Draco's throat closed up. His brain was experiencing a hideous malfunction, during which it couldn't think of anything to say except the truth. Then...
"It's probably some kind of tremendously clever scheme Malfoy's got going,"
said a fifth-year boy.
"You know, like in the Tragedy of the Lies, where everything that looks like a setback is part of the plot, and it ends with Granger's head on a stick, and nobody suspecting that it was him." "That makes sense,"
someone said from further down the table, and there was a lot of nodding.
"Do you know what the bush is up to?" Vincent muttered in an undertone.
Gregory Goyle didn't reply. In his mind, he could hear very clearly his master's voice saying,
I can't believe I believed every word of that.
The day the rumour had started about Salazar Slytherin showing Potter and Granger where to find bullies.
"Mr. Goyle," whispered Vincent.
Gregory Goyle's lips shaped the words, "Oh, no." But no sound came out. Hermione had left lunch early that day. For some reason, she hadn't felt hungry. Those few seconds of horrible humiliation had kept burning through her mind, over and over. The feeling of her face squished into the mashed potatoes, and then being thrown through the air, and then to the Slytherin boy's voice saying, "Apologize to me." It might have been the first time in her whole life that she'd felt like hating someone. The boy who'd thrown her, Marcus Flint, they'd said his name was, and whoever had cast the tripping jinx on her in the first place. She'd felt it. For one horrible instant, she'd wanted to go tell Harry that if he started getting creative on her behalf, she wouldn't object. She hadn't been a minute out of the great hall before she'd heard the sound of running feet behind and turned to see Daphne racing toward her, and listened to what her sunshine soldier had to say.
"Don't you understand?"
Daphne's voice was barely below a shriek.
"Just because someone's nice to you doesn't mean they're your friend. He's Draco Malfoy. His father's a Death Eater. All the parents of all his friends are Death Eaters. Not Goyle, Crabbe, everyone around him. Do you get it? They all despise Muggleborns. They want everyone like you."